About 2 months ago, I publicly stated that I would have every single one of those people seeking the Republican nomination for governor of the state of Colorado in the studio. And it turned out there were eight people in the field early on. Since then, there's been a dropout or two, but we had an addition just the other day, just a couple of weeks ago while I was gone on the trip, and that's Bob Beaupre. I'm sure you're familiar with Bob Beaupre. He's very well known in this state. He's been in banking. He's been in the United States Congress. He ran unsuccessfully for governor against Bill Ritter not too many years ago. And this is an afterthought only because Bob wasn't in the race earlier. But in order to be faithful to my pledge, I wanted to have Bob on the show as well. Just before I went to Arizona last week, we had Steve House on. It was also a late entry into the race. We've got on April 12th, we've got the state Republican convention, and that might narrow the field somewhat, although some people are petitioning on the ballot. So they don't need to get on at the convention. They don't need to win any primary votes. If they get enough petitions, they will automatically be on the ballot. And Tom Tancredo is one of those. We've had Tom on the program, of course, as well. So let's start with Bob Beaupre, who's in the studio with us right now, and I will disclose that I've known Bob for many years and we're good friends. However, it is generally my policy not to endorse, since I'm a partisan Republican, not to endorse among a field of candidates. I've made a couple of exceptions to this over the years, and one was when I endorsed the opponent to Douglas Bruce in the Colorado Springs area. I mean, even given that policy, there are some people who are simply out of bounds. And Douglas Bruce, in my opinion, was one of those. So I was delighted that he did not get the nomination and that somebody else filled that seat. All right, Bob, good to see you again, as always.
Good to see you, Mike, and welcome back from spring training and other points around the globe.
Thank you. By the way, my assessment of spring training, we still have a really good set of position players and some depth this year. Starting rotation is always iffy, but if everybody's healthy, we've got a reasonably good starting rotation. We need help in the bullpen, and that's going to be a big question mark this year. So we'll see.
It seems to show up every year late in the season. The arms get tired, somebody gets hurt, somebody goes down, and we need help more than ever late in the season. And to start the season a little bit short, not the place we want to be.
I don't think we're short on personnel. We're just short on talent.
Okay.
In the bullpen. Yeah, no insult intended, but we are not rich in talent in the bullpen, but you never know.
Well, and maybe somebody steps up and maybe they make an acquisition or two. We'll see.
Okay, let's talk about your campaign to win the Republican nomination for governor and then to beat John Hickenlooper in November. Why did you decide? Obviously, you weren't in the race early. What were the variables that made you decide to get into the race late?
Well, no surprise to you, Mike. We all watch and we observe. And yes, I've got an interest in both our state and my party. And it looked to me like, into January, early February, that Colorado maybe was still looking for another choice in an already crowded field that might become the choice. I did get a lot of encouragement, and I'm flattered by that. But we took assessment of what it might take to win. Thought we had a credible case to make, and I'm going to work very hard to make my case to the voters in Colorado and hopefully earn their support. Not my first time in a crowded primary. You'll recall in 2002, I was the seventh, I believe it was, to get in March, same month, in that primary and ended up being not only the nominee of the party, but eventually the winner.
Got a couple of emails from people who asked me, if Bob Beaupre couldn't beat Bill Ritter the last time around, why does he think he can get elected now if he's the nominee?
Yeah, sometimes good things take two tries at getting them done, and I think this might be one of them. Very different environment, first of all. In 06, Mike, I grossly underestimated, didn't give adequate consideration to how difficult it would be to be both a member of Congress and do my job back in D.C. and then come home basically on weekends and campaign for a statewide office. You might recall the environment wasn't all that good for people with an R behind their name in 2006. And so we were running against a bit of a headwind. This time I wouldn't say it's all favorable to people on my side of the aisle, but certainly it's nice to maybe have the pendulum swing back considerably the other way.
Just a footnote on that. 2006 was a terrible year for Republicans. That was in George W. Bush's second term. It was his midterm. And in 2006, the Republican Party lost its majority in Congress.
Precisely.
2008, of course, was a bad year as well, and that was the year that Barack Obama got elected. So there was an anti-Republican tide, and the Republican brand was damaged in 2006.
Yeah, and I'll freely admit, you know, every time you take the field, you don't necessarily play your best game. I did not run a good campaign in 2006. I'm one who's stubbed his toe a time or two. Usually it's not been quite so publicly. But I learned from my mistakes. I think anybody worth his salt learns from their mistakes, and we won't make them that way again. Most importantly now, there's an incumbent. There wasn't in 06, and we've got an incumbent with a record, and I don't think it's a sterling record. Our economy's still struggling. You look at the state auditor's report, and it begs the question if anybody's really in charge down there, if there's any leadership under the gold dome. And it looks to me like maybe leadership is the most wanting of things that are required in a governor. And if he doesn't want to lead, I will.
We had two Democrat senators recalled recently. Now it's 18 to 17 Democrats versus Republicans in the state Senate. One of those Democrats was recalled in Pueblo and by a very wide margin, which was an upset. Pueblo is usually friendly to Democrats. So you're quite right. The environment, the landscape is different now. And Governor Hickenlooper, who won easily in his elections for mayor and his first election for governor, is not as popular as he was earlier. He's suffered some damage too. The Nathan Dunlop sentence, whatever we
Nonsense.
Call it,
the no decision decision,
exactly, which kicks the can down the road. And then, of course, not vetoing one bill when his party had a majority in both houses of the state legislature, including every single one of those anti-gun bills.
Mike, that's one of the big indications. You know, I actually expected, not to agree with John on everything, but I expected his, I'm a pro-business kind of a Democrat, party doesn't matter all that much to me, I'm a middle-of-the-road moderate kind of a guy. I expected some evidence of that. You just put your finger on a key point that makes the case. In what everybody panned as the most anti-business legislative session in Colorado history, he vetoed zero, not a single bill. Now, some out there may be saying, what's a governor usually veto? One, two, or three? How many in a session? Bill Owens, in his 8 years, vetoed 149 bills. 149 in 8 years. He vetoed 91 in just his last two. He vetoed whether there was Republican control of the State House or Democrat control of the State House, and not just for exercising the veto. Bill tells me he saved the Colorado taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars in the process. In the most anti-business session we've ever had, zero vetoes by Governor Hickenlooper.
We're talking to Bob Beaupre, who's now seeking the Republican nomination for governor. 713-8585, our telephone number. We'll take your phone calls as well if you have questions for Bob.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days, 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
Bob Beaupre in the studio with us. He's seeking the Republican nomination for governor. We should talk a little bit about your business career as a cattle rancher and a banker. Tell people about that.
Grew up on a family dairy farm, worked with my dad and a brother for the first about 40 years of my life. And then, like a lot of farms up and down the Front Range, we were approached to annex. In our case, the city of Lafayette needed to grow, wanted to grow, and ours was an attractive site. And I ended up looking after, on behalf of our family and a neighbor, looking after that development, which is now about 1,300 housing units, a golf course community on the west side of Lafayette. Hale Irwin designed the course, and we're very proud of how that turned out. At the same time, my wife and I had bought into a little community bank. I had been on the board of a unit bank, the old affiliated bank shares, and I bought into this little bank so our hometown bank, or a hometown bank, would still be available, and that turned out to be a great experience, partnering with the local small business people, the everyday folks in first our little town of Lafayette, but then expanding to a number of other towns. We ended up with 12 different branches, and the bank turned out to be a very good experience and a great success. Went to Congress then, and then came full circle back to the land. Today we've got a ranch up in the mountains up in what's called North Park. The little town of Walden is about 20 minutes away from us. And very rural, very ranchy area, but absolutely spectacularly beautiful. And I'm living out another dream. We're raising buffalo, bison, and vertically integrated, I guess, to a business guy. You understand that. We not only raise them and the grass hay for their feed on the place, but we are harvesting the animals, having them processed at a USDA plant up in Pierce, Colorado, and selling to customers from Connecticut to California.
And, of course, when the bulls are breeding, they're vertically integrated, too.
They are that. Good point, Mike.
One thing about being a farmer or a rancher, it said, if you owe the bank $500,000, the bank owns your farm. If you owe the bank $5 million, you own the bank.
Well, I learned another lesson about agriculture from my dad, and it's on that point. People always ask, are you really a fiscal conservative? My dad, after struggling for a number of years early in life and dry years and almost lost the place a couple times, he finally got out of debt by working very hard in 1971. And from that point on, and I was in partnership with him for the next 20 years, he never borrowed a dime. And it wasn't because I didn't ask. I wanted to expand. I wanted to grow. And I thought borrowing some money, borrowing capital to do that was the obvious way. And Dad just had a hard and fast rule. He said, you know, if we don't owe anybody anything, they can't come and take it away. He had experienced that. So everything we did from that point on was kind of like Jake Jabs, who you would also know. Mm-hmm. The way he does it, Dad simply put it, if we can't pay for it, we don't need it, and you had to find a way. Pretty good training for getting into government.
A lot of people who lived through the Great Depression came away with that mentality.
Dad and Mom were both Depression-era kids, and they did grow up hand-to-mouth. And those experiences, that memory never left them. Even when they were to the point in life where they could kick back and enjoy a little bit, they always thought that there was the possibility of another rainy day. And it's just good training. It's great discipline. And I learned from a master. They were great people.
When we come back after our bottom of the hour news break, let's talk about some of the issues and the kinds of things that you will run on, assuming you're the Republican nominee for governor. I don't think there's much point here in talking about the differences among the various Republican candidates. We've been all through that many, many times. But let's talk about the positives and what we're going to focus on in your campaign. And we can take some phone calls as well. 713-8585, our telephone number. That's 713-8585. The seat you held in the U.S. House was the 7th Congressional District,
yes,
which was a new district as the state's population increased after the 2000 census. We were awarded a 7th Congressional seat. That's the one you ran. Were you the first person in that seat, as I recall?
I was.
When you won that seat, it was kind of a toss-up district. Now it's a district that's in play, unlike Denver, of course, where a Republican can't hardly win Denver. But that 7th Congressional District is a district that's possibly winnable for Republicans, but leaning Democrat at this point.
Yeah, it is. And in that regard, Mike, it's not unlike running statewide in Colorado. You could say Colorado's probably a toss-up state. And I think in a very real way, my experience in trying to communicate with the people in the old 7th Congressional District prepared me well to take the case statewide. Because we are a very diverse state, and you'd better be comfortable on 17th Street. You'd better also be comfortable in rural Colorado, of which there is a great deal of.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days. 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
Okay, over the course of the last couple of months, we've had every single Republican who sought the Republican nomination for governor, and the last to enter that field was Bob Beaupre, and he's in the studio with us right now. I'm going to take some calls in just a second, but could you touch on some of the key issues that you're going to be zeroing in on if you're the Republican nominee?
Leadership's going to be the big one, Mike, and maybe it always is, but I think particularly now, we were talking earlier about how the governor, this supposed anti, or this pro-business governor, party doesn't matter, middle of the road kind of a guy, couldn't find a single bill to veto in that entire last legislative session, which everybody panned as the most anti-business session we've got. The state auditor has almost been like he's waterboarding the governor. Day after day, we get another report that that just begs the question, is anybody really in charge? Is anybody offering direction? So I think there is a gross lack of leadership. The biggest area, though, of concern to Coloradans is still the economy. Mike, you're a student of economics. You know better than anybody. We've never had, not since the Second World War, in what is it now, 11 recoveries we've gone through, I think 11 or 12, we've never had such a slow, sluggish recovery. Nothing even comes close to this one. And in Colorado, our rate of decline of our labor force, the labor force participation rate, is declining at even a steeper rate than the national one. We had 71,000 people leave the labor force the last 6 months of last year. 30,000 jobs went away. We have been flatlined at over 500,000 people still on food stamps, relying on food stamps. That's twice what the rate was before the recession started. Aldo Savaldi at the Denver Post calculated, if you factor in the people that have been frustrated and walked away from the labor force, our real unemployment rate in Colorado is over 10%. And that, again, is almost 5 years into a supposed recovery. This election is going to be about jobs. It's going to be about the lack of leadership. It's been about the fact that people got in this office but obviously didn't have an agenda to improve Colorado. If he won't lead, I will.
Let's take some phone calls in Littleton. Doug, you're on 850 KOA. What's your question for Bob Beaupre?
Yes, my question for Representative Beaupre is he more aligned with the traditional Republican Party or more aligned with the Tea Party?
Well, Doug, good question, an obvious question. I'm more aligned with, some people would call them conservative values, traditional values, and I think both of the groups that you highlight in general adhere to the same. Now, we like to get subsets and somehow try to win elections by subtraction. I never figured out how we could win elections with less people. The argument I'm going to make is to all Coloradans that the track we've been on, this Obama looper track that we've been on for long enough, hasn't worked. It especially hasn't worked for the people who they said they were on the side of: young people, minorities, women. These are the ones that are taking it on the chin harder than anybody in this economy. They're the ones seeing the jobs come back at the slowest rate. They're the ones who saw their health care premiums go up when they were supposed to go down. They're the ones who are seeing their real household income, if they've still got a job, continue to deteriorate. They're the ones who ought to be ready, and I hope my message will connect with them, that if you believe we're headed down the wrong track, and two out of three people say we are, then maybe it's time for some real change, somebody who's actually been out there, created jobs, built things up, understand how government sometimes gets it right, but usually gets in the way of job creation, wealth creation, seizing opportunity, as Colorado's always been so good at. Now, if you call that Tea Party or Republican or some other label, call it what you will, but I hope it's a message that resonates to more than half the voters in Colorado, because that's how many it's going to take for me to win this election.
Okay, Doug, thanks for your call. Let's go to Rick in Erie. You're on 850 KOA. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Mike. I have a question for Bob.
Shoot.
Hey, Bob, several years ago, they shut down all the, not all of them, but a lot of the irrigation wells from Lafayette to the Eastern Plains. And our caucuses the other day, some of the state officials were talking about, as an experiment, reopening these wells. Would you be in favor of that?
Yeah, in fact, Rick, what I think we need to look at is storing more water, and one of the ways to store it is underground and replenish a lot of that underground water that's been lost. It's a process called porosity. I'm told by some engineers that Colorado's geology is very, encouraging of, very adaptive to that kind of thought process. We don't have to. The good news in Colorado is we really don't have to steal anybody else's water. We don't have to change or trample on Colorado water law or national water law, the Water Compact agreements. But we do have to be in a position to be able to slow down some of the water before it leaves here, be that in a tragic situation like last September with a flood, but more naturally as it happens every spring when we see the rivers filled up and lots of runoff, and yet we don't have any place to put it. A lot of it could be, I believe, put underground, replenish these wells, and then hopefully be able to get in a situation like you referred to where we can turn on again many of those wells that I think tragically were turned off and really impacted, I mean dramatically impacted, the value of communities and busted the backs of a lot of individuals. You know that. I know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rick, thanks for your call. Let's go to Monument. Carla, you're on 850 KOA. Question for Bob Beaupre.
Absolutely. First of all, Bob, thank you so much for taking time to come down to the Sunrise Republican Women's Forums.
Oh, hey, that was fun.
What a great gathering. And meet Virginia Ann.
She is a gem, isn't she? That's my little six-year-old granddaughter.
My question is, you do have a couple of excellent Republican opponents who have the same conservative values that you and I hold. When you win the governorship, would you be able to use their expertise either as part of your cabinet or on a committee? I'm thinking of Ronnie Bell Sylvester, for instance, who is by far the weakest candidate, but she does have expertise in the area of water. So would you be able to plug in and use some of these people in your administration?
The entire field of candidates are friends of mine, and I respect every one of them. They've been supportive of me and I of them in the past, and we all put on the same team jersey, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's Ronnie or if it's Mike or it's Scott or it's any of the rest of them. First, we'd have to have a conversation, assuming I win, number one, but then we'd have to have a conversation as to whether or not they're interested.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize that talent, and I'd like to put a collective team of talented people together. Actually, that's one of my concerns about the last two Democrat administrations. I don't think they've been strong enough. I don't think they've had the kind of experienced leadership that Colorado needs, and especially right now. And I recognize from my past experience, whether it was our family farm when we developed it, certainly when it was my bank, I didn't know everything. It's impossible for one person to know everything about everything and to be all places at one point in time. What a leader needs to do is be able, number one, attract good talent, motivate and direct that talent, then hold them accountable and build a culture that people clearly understand. When I talk about a shortage of leadership right now with the Hickenlooper administration, that's what I'm pointing to. It begs the question of where is the governor? What's the governor's agenda? What's he doing down there to make Colorado as great as it ought to be? We're better than this. We deserve better than this. I've lived it all my life, and I want to see us get back to that sense of, yes, you know, this is Colorado. This is how we operate. This is who we are.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, Carla, thanks for your phone call. Right back on 850 KOA.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days, 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
Bob Beaupre seeking the Republican nomination for governor in the studio with us. Let's go right back to the phones in Colorado Springs. Craig, you're on 850 KOA. Hello, Craig.
Hey, Bob, you're just a Craig down Colorado
Springs. I know that voice. How you doing, Craig?
I wanted to get a hold of you. I am working down here. I worked last weekend. I had a guy sign the petition, and he said, you know what? I remember that guy when he ran for office.
Yeah, I still got the same pair of boots, too.
I just wanted to say hi. And
God bless you, Craig.
I am working the weekends down here, getting the petition signed, I'd love to see this time we're going to win this one.
Amen. I'm with you, Craig. You get enough sleep now. You work hard for me, but you make sure you take care of yourself.
Thanks for your phone call, Craig. Let's go to Oliver in Cherry Hills. You're on 850 KOA. Hello, Oliver.
Hi. I just had a question for your representative. Is he going to put this Nathan Dunlap to death if he gets elected?
Yes. I'll carry out the laws of the state of Colorado, and that's what the law says.
And the Governor Hickenlooper didn't permanently stay or set aside that death sentence. He just kicked the can down the road, leaving it to the next governor. So if you're the next governor,
I'll do it. I'll enforce that law and the rest of the laws of the state of Colorado.
Okay, that's all I needed. Thank you.
Okay. I'll give Hickenlooper credit since he's a geologist. He's been pretty good on fracking, and he's been defending the procedure. How would your energy policy differ from his?
Well, it would differ from his. I find it curious. He has been okay on fracking, and he'd like us to believe that he's a pro-energy, pro-oil and gas kind of a governor. But out of the other side of his mouth, he brags about these toughest regulations, toughest in the country, that he's imposed on the oil and gas industry. And now we come with more on the air quality, the methane standards, which he also says are the first ever, the toughest in the nation. I'm for clean air. This is my home, too. It's the only home I've ever had. My grandkids are here now, too. Everybody wants clean air. A rancher wants a clean environment. I've been taking care of my little corner of the environment all my life. But reasonable regulation, Mike, is different from the most difficult, most restraining in the nation. When you do the most restraining of anything on or of any industry, you get less of it. That's by definition. You tax it more, you regulate it more, you get less of it. I think what we need is common sense regulation. I want to encourage our energy development. I want to get as energy independent as we can, as fast as we possibly can. I want the energy industry, renewable as well as oil, gas, and coal in Colorado, to be the engine that leads us into the direction we should have been on already, a healthy, robust, job-creating economy. Economies expand, jobs are created, wealth and opportunity are created with access to affordable, sustainable supplies of energy. We're not there. Let me give you a quick example. In 2008, I'm told, and this is by somebody that I ought to know because he's in the industry, in 2008, there were 99 rigs operating in the Piceance Basin over on the West Slope. Today, there are 9, according to him. 99-9. Part of that is regulation. Part of that is the fact that we don't have the ability to export LNG, liquefied natural gas, which would not only be great for our economy, creating jobs, bringing revenue to our state and our nation, but those poor folks in Europe right now that are staring Vladimir Putin in the eye, they'd have an alternative as well because we could be sending them the LNG that he's holding them hostage for. There are enormous benefits, economic ones, jobs, as well as our national security, and we ought to be the epicenter of all things energy, not pushing energy into the corner, but unleashing that wonderful blessing we've got.
Regarding labor policy, by executive order, Governor Hickenlooper's predecessor, Governor Ritter, signed an executive order that, in essence, enabled a state employees' labor union. Would you reverse that by executive order?
I sure would. Absolutely. And even a number of Governor Ritter's supporters back then threw a complete hissy fit, and rightfully so. When he did that was an error that I would rescind. There's an executive order that I'd rescind from. Well, it wasn't an executive order; it was legislation that Governor Hickenlooper signed. That's in the news right now. It's that one for the mandatory early release of some of these very violent criminals. I think that needs to be rescinded and reworked. There's plenty we can do with state corrections, but turning violent criminals out early and putting them back on the street to commit heinous crimes again is not one of the things that a governor ought to be doing.
How about the Public Employees Retirement Association, their defined benefit plan, which is grossly underfunded, even more so than they admit, because they're using an unreasonably optimistic rate of return on their investment portfolio?
Well, you've spoken out about this as much as anybody that I know exists in Colorado right now. You know the issue very well. The numbers, unless you cook the books, unless you use phony assumptions, as you just cited, they don't lie. This thing is headed down the path of many other public employees, trust funds in other states, same as our national entitlements. And it's not beyond repair. Those choices are pretty obvious as well. I will immediately, upon taking office, put together a panel to make those recommendations, and then not my underlings, but I will lead the charge to get the state legislature and the reforms in place that will need to be put in place in order to save something before it completely collapses and falls to the taxpayers of Colorado to bail out.
The pair of trustees and managers say that any shortfall has to be made up by Colorado taxpayers come hell or high water.
Well, wouldn't it be nice if you had that ability to operate in your own house, regardless of how you overspend or misplan or the mistakes you make, the warning signs you ignore, that somebody else is going to bail you out. Nice bet if you can get it.
Bob Beaupre, thanks so much for being with us. We'll take a break for news. Come back with Jordan Goodman for our regular Money Monday segment.